Hello, everyone, and welcome to the LaRouche Show. This is December 21st, and I am Marcia Mary Baker, and our guest today in the studio with me is Anton Chaitkin. Now, Tony Chaitkin is history editor of the Executive Intelligence Review. He's author of many things, the book Treason in America, and co-author of the book George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography. And that latter one came out 10 years ago in 1992. It was published by Executive Intelligence Review. Now, I'm going to turn to Tony in just a minute, and I'll say right now, you know that you can email to us, those of you listening on the web, know where to do that. It's radio@larouchepub.com anytime in the next hour. And also, there are those on the conference call in the phone bank, and we will be taking your questions by relay. Bob Baker is moderating. Now, we're going to turn to Tony Chaitkin in just a moment here, but let me mention the topic. It's of special urgency regarding current history. Namely, it concerns questions about Israel and Prime Minister Ariel Sharon there and his grouping in Israel and elsewhere of what we can call war crazies. Now, many of you know that on January 28th, the elections will take place in Israel for the parliament of Israel called the Knesset. And this is no, in any way, ordinary kind of elections as usual. Tony can describe the patterns, the precedents, and so forth, showing huge flows of illegal, dirty money and influence from outside Israel that could be deployed to attempt to make sure there's a mandate for Sharon, and that is, steal the elections. So exposing this is very important that everyone get the information today. But understand, it's not a given. Israel's at a crossroads. There's tremendous international implications, and there can be a real shift here. Now, Tony, before turning to you, one more thing to stress, and that is we have, over this weekend, a special evaluation by Lyndon LaRouche that there is an immediate danger that Ariel Sharon in Israel could pull some kind of provocation, that is, a contrived incident, like the Gulf of Tonkin was used, in other words, to rationalize precipitating some war action. There are readings to back this up, that certainly Sharon is the kind of person who could do such a thing, and we can come back to this at any time in the show. But what I want to alert everyone to is Lyndon LaRouche will be putting out a statement on this immediate danger, and you can look for it on our current website that you're listening to the show on, or any website associated with Lyndon LaRouche. He has a Political Action Committee website called LaRouche in 2004. But check this out over the next 24 to 36 hours. Okay, now enough from me. I want to turn to Tony Chaitkin, and Tony, you can start anywhere. You do know we're going to be asking about your all the exposés you've been writing for several months on the dirty money and connections and corruption that Ariel Sharon is involved in. Go right ahead.
Let me say, first of all, that within a month, there's going to be a decision in Israel between Amram Mitzna, the Labor Party candidate, who is a peace candidate for Prime Minister, and the current Prime Minister, Ariel Sharon. Sharon can be defeated despite the propaganda, and the LaRouche organization and his presidential campaign have taken what some may consider drastic measures to bring to light the shocking real character of the Likud party of the Ariel Sharon regime that came to power by the murder of Rabin, former prime minister, and to show that the election campaign currently underway to keep Sharon in power and to maintain the nightmare of war in the Middle East, that this campaign is funded by gangster methods, money from gangsters, the use of tax-exempt organizations in the United States, and the flooding of Israel with illegal money, illegal from the donors and illegal from the recipients. This scandal is now growing. Two members of the Likud Party Central Committee have been arrested on bribery charges. The stink from the gangsterism, from the outright fascist character of the present Israeli regime is rising to the point where Sharon's backing within Israel is falling rapidly, even though people within Israel have been so frightened over the years, frightened earlier by having been some of them in Nazi concentration camps, now frightened by years and years of bombings and terrorism. We have a chance to bring this nightmare to an end, and we intend to ruthlessly expose the character not only of Sharon's illegal backing and the attempt to rig the elections next month, but the group within the United States who are providing the money and the backing for this nightmare of war, to the point where we can see the possibility of having the entire neoconservative group within the Bush administration dropped, thrown out of the government within a relatively short time. This is a possibility. Now, let me give you a couple of highlights to start with. The mayor of Jerusalem, Mr. Ehud Olmert, O-L-M-E-R-T, regularly comes to the United States to raise money for his party, the Likud party. He doesn't say to the news media, I'm raising money for a political party. He doesn't say to the news media, I'm raising money to keep a war party in power. What he says is, I've come to Dallas, or I've come to California, to meet with Christian fundamentalists who are giving me money in to aid Israel in its cause of settling people, or its cause of maintaining flowers in Jerusalem, or some other charitable cause. He is himself the founder of a charitable foundation called New Jerusalem. The money from this and similar foundations, which he and his friends are involved in, is completely unaccounted for. The money simply goes to the Likud and other political projects. He was in Dallas recently, and he was in Washington for a rally with his friends Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and other of these charlatans in the United States, these Klan types that have become bound up with the present Israeli regime. He got a $500,000 check for these illegal purposes from a church in San Diego on his most recent tour in the United States. Along with Olmert are a host of other organizations which we have tracked. We have spotlighted the leadership, the background. One of the main organizers of this filthy operation is the cult of the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. And we have the documentation going back to 1981 on that. Let me point out a spectacular point on this that every American should think through. On September 11th, 2001, the attacks on our World Trade Center and Pentagon were used as a pretext, as an excuse, for a previously existing plan to go to war with Muslims all over the world, what they call a clash of civilizations. The two airplanes that were hijacked and detonated, destroyed the World Trade Center towers, were hijacked at Logan Airport in Boston. At the time, that airport's security was under the control of a convicted Israeli Likud election fraudster. His name is Menachem Atzmon. His company is the ICTS consulting company. They own Huntley USA, and they, in 1999, they took over the security for that Logan Airport, along with many other airports in the United States and Europe. This man was convicted in 1996. He was the treasurer of the Likud party, convicted of election campaign finance fraud. The entire regime and the election campaign associated with its fight for keeping this nightmare going is a criminal operation. The main funders of the Likud party are themselves criminals. And we have now a chance, together with the peace forces in Israel, and together with the honest and sane people within the U.S. government with whom we are cooperating, to clean this up and end this nightmare.
Well, people should know that Tony Chaykin and the team have recently put out the actual documentation of some of these groups that are serving as conduits, for example, the one connected to the mayor of Jerusalem, Mayor Olmert, they have the photographs of the street address in New York City and this kind of thing. In other words, Tony, if you could say more about the pattern of these groups and their fundraising, this I think one's called One Jerusalem.
Right. The mayor, again, Mayor Ehud Olmert, participated in and helped organize a rally back in 2001, January, just before Ariel Sharon was elected prime minister. It was a rally similar to the kind of rallies the Nazis used to hold in Nuremberg. There were about 300,000 or 400,000 people, very expensively bussed into Jerusalem, all right-wingers and many of the settlers from the occupied territories coming in, whipped up into an anti-Arab, anti-Muslim frenzy. The rally was for the purpose of denouncing and attacking the then Israeli Prime Minister, Barak, and trying to overthrow him and get in the elections that were scheduled a few weeks later to get Sharon elected. This rally was financed by a foundation called One Jerusalem, and that foundation is an American tax-exempt foundation. That is, when you contribute money to it, you don't have to pay any taxes on the income that you contributed to.
That's the 501c3.
This is totally illegal. You're not. That's supposed to be for charity or for education. It's definitely not for covert financing of political operations
so
in
you're
another
saying
country.
It's illegal it's in this country.
Illegal
and?
Everywhere. It's and Israel has very strict laws against foreign contributions to election campaigns. Now that foundation is headquartered in a single building in the United States. It's at 136 East 39th Street on the fourth floor, according to the declaration they made to the Internal Revenue Service. In that same building, there is a another foundation called One Israel. It's run by the same person, who's the head of the Settlers Council, Yehiel Leiter. He was the personal tour guide for Ariel Sharon when Sharon came in the earlier tours to the United States. And he set up this foundation to get tax-exempt funds, supposedly to pay for night vision equipment, bulletproof vests, and armored cars for the settlers who have these armed camps within the Palestinian territories. This, again, is supposed to be a tax-exempt charitable activity in the United States. That's illegal. But the problem is that that's really not where the money is going. That's maybe some of it is, but this you have a constant flow of millions upon millions of dollars from these tax-exempt foundations into the coffers of the Likud party. I'll give you another example. You have a fellow out in who was in Chicago named Yehiel Eckstein, a rabbi, so-called rabbi. These people are basically gangsters. They never are really involved in religion. He worked for the Anti-Defamation League from 1977 to 83. He is now in charge of sending millions upon millions of illegal dollars to the Likud party in Israel. How did he get into this business? While he was working for the Anti-Defamation League in Chicago, an operative of the Sun Myung Moon cult, Joe Cherba, got together with him, and Eckstein and Cherba and another Mooney representative set up a meeting between then Prime Minister Menachem Begin, right-wing Prime Minister of Israel, with Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and Evans in Dallas and others of these radical right preachers in the United States. Joe Cherba, the guy that from the Moonies, it typifies the problem here in our country. This is not some legitimate Christian or Jewish operation. Chirba was a gangster with Meir Kahane's terrorist organization. He then went into the Pentagon, in the United States Pentagon, working for our military, and he was fired because of what he was. He was a gangster working for Kahane. He was fired from our Pentagon and was hired in 1980 by Sun Myung-moon to lead the so-called Causa organization. And then he and the so-called Rabbi David Ben-Ami.
Is that Causa nominally anti-communist?
Yeah, this all comes out of the Moon organization was developed by British intelligence in the United States using the radical right crazies within our military at the end of World War II. That's the faction that set up something called the World Anti-Communist League. They took this guy Moon, who's a sex criminal from Korea, and they took old retreaded Japanese war criminals and retreaded Nazis from Europe in the Buckman organization and set up Moon's cult as something that would be a money conduit for the radical right in the United States. They give money to the many preachers. They even give it to they bought Jerry Falwell when he went bankrupt. It's from 1999 on. I'm sorry, 1994 on, Jerry Falwell has been entirely owned by Sun Myung-moon's organization. And anybody associated with Falwell who's working with the Likud party is basically a stooge for Moon and the people behind Moon. I'd like to center your attention on the character of the elections coming up. What is the money used for? The money is to keep an atmosphere of terror, of fright, of a crisis going in Israel. There's such an atmosphere of scandal around this that only some new level of fright against the population of Israel and against the whole region could possibly succeed now in maintaining any support for Sharon in next month's election. So the LaRouche has issued a warning that Sharon, in his desperation, as his poll numbers fall, may very well try to stage a very, very hot provocation with Lebanon, Syria, possibly Iraq, to get a major war started, even though we have stalled the war that according to the chicken hawks in the Pentagon, the civilian advisor crazies, that they wanted to get going. We've stalled that. Sharon may try to save himself by launching a provocation now. So that the issue here is if people can cooperate with us and can pay attention to the real problem here, we could pull off a real miracle. I wrote a book in 1992 with Webster Tarpley called George Bush: The Unauthorized Biography. In that book, I looked at the illegal funding going on from New York City to the Nazi Party in Berlin to boost Hitler to power in Germany, and in looking into this outrage in Israel, when I saw that you have at the same address these overlapping foundations, and there's several more at that same address, which are all conduits for the same thing, it really struck me that I'm looking at the same kind of animal as back in the 20s and 30s at Brown Brothers Harriman with Prescott Bush and George Herbert Walker and Harriman, the same kind of style of money laundering. But more importantly, this is something for Jewish people as well as Christians and Muslims to do some soul searching. Is it possible that Jewish leaders can be Nazis, can be fascists, can have the same character as those who murdered the Jews in the 1940s? It's not only possible, but why did you miss it? That's the real issue. How did you miss it? It was missed because our country, the United States, from I'd say Nixon on, underwent a terrible degradation of our political process. The Southern strategy, the deregulation, the real fascistization of our economy in particular. So you have a guy like Ron Lauder of the Estee Lauder cosmetic fortune. He himself is a gangster. He goes to Israel and sets up a right-wing political foundation, the Shalem Center, that is a center for funding the Likud illegally, the same kind of gangster money flow into Israel to finance elections. And yet people don't talk about that because they say, well, that's a legitimate right-wing foundation. They're for what other right-wing foundations are for? Busting labor unions, cutting the budget, eliminating any government enterprises. Isn't that normal? Well, it was normal in Nazi Germany, but it's not normal for a Jewish state to be hosting that kind of thing. And it's not normal for gangsters to murder prime ministers and take power the way Sharon did. None of this is normal. And the courage of Mitzna in running a peace campaign, I think, will pay off. Just like the people who are for peace in Korea, and the somewhat courageous campaign of the German Chancellor Schroeder was also rewarded with victory. The Democrats in the United States must take a lesson from these people.
Yes, as you indicate, there are tremendous shifts going on. We can return to that in a second. I just want to say, we have an email coming in from Rod in Edmonton, Canada, in the prairies in Alberta, and I just want to say that the continuity you've given and some of the wild, hard facts right now of these dirty money networks and agencies, if people watch television who are listening in right now on either cable or satellite, you can see Rabbi Eckstein at work every morning almost, 7 days a week, videos are run where he is soliciting money, especially to bring in Russians or to pay for immigration into Israel. You can see Reverend Hagee. He's from Texas. He interconnects with the networks you're saying. Now, let's turn right to a questioner from Canada, and it concerns what you just said. What about what he calls it, the utter hypocrisy of, for example, Canada's foreign policy on what's going on, and the fact that you have a continuing absence of news about the treatment and the butchery of Palestinians? He wants to know about that. And secondly, why is Israel's nuclear arsenal not mentioned in particular?
Well, it's obvious to anybody that Canada doesn't support the prospect of war in Iraq, and that the population is certainly against the kind of butchery that is taking place against the Palestinians. What people in Canada may not be aware of is that there's a shift that is not only going on, but a radical shift is very possible within the Bush administration itself. And this is what we really need to concentrate on. This is highly unstable. Rather than, see, some populists often like to sit in the basement and worry about when the end is going to come. Instead of that approach, the obvious thing to do is to get rid of the problem. We have right now, for example, in Canada as well as the United States, most churches, most Christian churches, are solidly for peace in the Middle East. They don't support Sharon, and they don't support Armageddon in the Middle East. You have a noisy little bunch supported by Conrad Black and by the extreme right media cartel that is carrying out pure gangsterism. And people have to be a little bit less timid about taking this on. For example, Yehiel Eckstein, the guy that I mentioned who was in the ADL, he has something called the International Federation of Christians and Jews. It's not a federation, it's just his operation. And he works with these Falwell and Robertson types. He now lives in Israel. He set up another Jerusalem foundation while he's there. He has raised, he says, about $30 million for Israel. Now, this is this money going, quote, for Israel? No. If you talk to Esther Levins, the head of another one of these so-called Christians and Jews organizations, another right-wing, but a rival right-wing foundation, doing the same kind of gangster operation with many of the same end-of-the-world preachers. She says that Yehiel Eckstein has raised over $30 million, and no one can account for the money. So the thieves sometimes squabble, but the police in Israel, as well as the tax police here, have turned their eyes to these things and said, wait a minute, my God, why should we get into an Armageddon scenario just to please a bunch of gangsters? So you in Canada or people in the United States and people in Israel, you have to be able to tell the truth. The issue is, can people tell the truth? And the truth is not simply to snipe at the U.S. government or to snipe at George W. Bush. The issue is, he is somebody who has been on the wrong track. We have now had some indications of a very dramatic shift that LaRouche has been in the middle of bringing about. Trent Lott is gone as Senate leader. Al Gore of the Southern strategy wing of the Democrats resigned from the presidential race. Lieberman, the co-chairman of Yehiel Eckstein's organization, was trounced in the elections, in the American elections November 5th. The entire economics team of President Bush has been fired. We are now at the point where a shift towards sanity, towards a Franklin Roosevelt LaRouche approach, is absolutely possible and essential. President Bush is going to give a State of the Union address around the 20th of January. It's completely up in the air what he's going to say, because they know they're going to lose if they don't change directions.
Thanks, Tony. I want you to come back to this shift, and I'll just take a program break here to make some announcements. And also alert the people on the phone bank on the conference call. They can be giving their questions to Bob Baker to relay into you. Now, as you know, you're listening to The LaRouche Show, which is live every Saturday. It's from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time in the United States. And those of you who want to phone in from the United States directly, you can dial 1-866-857-4327. That's 1-866-857-4327. And sometimes certain people want to call in internationally. What you do is call the United States area code, and then the United States country code, sorry. Then you dial area code 703-443-8419. That is the U.S. country code, and then dial 703-443-8419. And I do want to stress also, there's still time for email, but I want to stress that later or at any time during the week, you can phone into Executive Intelligence Review to see about getting in documentation, the kind of thing Tony Chaikin is describing. He's co-authored many articles in recent months, but you call in toll-free in the United States at 1-888-347-3258. That's 1-888-347-3258. And those of you on the web, as you know, the email, it's radio@larouchepub.com. Now, let's go back to this, Tony. We left off with a dramatic shift you're describing on the U.S. political scene. And Lyndon LaRouche said before November 5th and the elections, there might be a certain pretense, but watch out after November 5th. And that's we're seeing that almost every hour of every day. Now, you could pick up on whatever thread you want, yeah. But Trent Lott you mentioned, or carry on this, where we stand today.
Okay, now I wanted people to get a full force idea of the possibilities here. I mentioned a man named Menachem Atzmon. He is the majority, he and his partner, his name is Harel, are the owners of the security operation at Logan Airport in Boston. since 1999. They were on guard when the planes were hijacked there at Logan Airport and flew into the World Trade Center, both of them. Now, this guy was convicted in 1996 of election campaign finance fraud in Israel, as I mentioned. Following his conviction, he left his job as president of an illegal money-raising organization in America called the Israel Development Fund, a tax-exempt foundation illegally funneling money to the Likud. I mean, they made false reports to the IRS. The whole works. But this is a very interesting operation. This guy, Atzmon, was treasurer of the Likud party in Israel, as well as he was co-treasurer with Olmert, the mayor of Jerusalem. So this is a tight little bunch. But this tax-exempt foundation that this crook was involved with in the United States was in Philadelphia. It was run by a Philadelphia attorney named Stephen L. Friedman from a top Philadelphia law firm, Dilworth Paxson, a lifelong friend of the Netanyahu family. And this guy Friedman, running the foundation for Atzmon, this guy Friedman is the American lawyer for the Likud party. The most important thing to point out is that he is also a big shot in the American Republican Party. You have here a faction of the GOP. You also have a faction of the Democrats around Lieberman. But in the Bush administration, in the Republican Party of Nixon and Lott and Wolfowitz and this crowd that's pushing for the war. I'm not talking about the Republican Party of Colin Powell. The American generals and saner people within the administration are totally opposed to the war project. They know what the problem is with the Israeli Likud, and they hate this stuff.
I think General Zinni, he's retired, but he's been very vocal in Washington.
Yeah. There is no support by sane people. What you're looking at is a group of crazed utopians. And these are headed up by people like Brzezinski and Kissinger and others. But you have in this company that runs the security at Logan Airport, where they allowed the hijackings to take place, this convicted criminal, Atzmon, and you have a group of Israeli intelligence officers and the former commander-in-chief of the Israeli Air Force, a guy named Lapidot. These are the men who run that company. So you have to ask the question, what is this axis? You want to talk about an axis of evil. You have a faction of completely insane, irresponsible people in the Pentagon who have no real military experience, who are laughed at and scorned by real generals. And they are tied to this group of gangsters in Israel who are themselves financed through these networks, not only from the radical right in the United States, but from outright gangsters like Gutnik, like Mishulam Rickless, like others we've been talking about over the years in the on this program and in EIR magazine. So this grouping is really headed for the junk pile in U.S. politics. Their support in the 1980s, the reason they were able to take over the Republican Party and the Democrats, was that they had a lot of money, and the people that stuck around with them had a lot of money from speculation. That's over. The party's over. People are out of work. The children who are in school now are not going to have jobs. There's no life ahead of them. So now is the time. Right now, in the next month, before this Israeli election, now's the time to strike. The future of the United States is going to be determined by what we do in the next month in a few weeks.
Thank you. That's tremendous. In other words, the axis of corruption itself is vulnerable now. I want to go right ahead to take one or more questions from the conference call, Tony. And Bob Baker, who's moderating it, is going to relay those questions. You can take several at a time, and then you can answer them in any order you want, Tony. Go ahead, Bob, if you're there.
Okay, we have four questions so far. I'll just give you two. Scott from South Jersey asks, what about the Haaretz article and story about Al-Qaeda and the Al-Qaeda cell on the Gaza Strip? And Judy in Boise wants to know what we know about Trent Lott's resignation. Could you comment on that?
Thanks a lot. Go right ahead, Tony.
Okay, over the past few weeks, there's been a really important story coming out of Israel that a Palestinian was approached by the Israeli intelligence service, by Sharon's intelligence service, and was requested to set up a Palestinian-based section of Al-Qaeda, of Osama bin Laden's organization, within the Gaza Strip. And the person they asked to do this turned to the Palestinian security authorities and said, I don't want to do this. What's going on? And they said, you should play along with the Israeli Mossad, with Sharon's people for a while, and then let's see what happens. And so they got all the details, and they had a press conference, and they blew this thing wide open. The fact that it hasn't been reported in the American mainstream media is just another disgusting indication that those newspapers, like the Washington Post, are headed for the junk pile themselves. We have done the real background on this, obviously, to show that the Al-Qaeda itself and Osama bin Laden were products of the faction that we're talking about here, the Brzezinski faction, created in the 70s and 80s. By this faction of the Western intelligence community. So the question that LaRouche asked months ago was, when did Osama bin Laden quit working for Brzezinski and this intelligence faction? Beyond that, within Egypt in particular, there is something called the Muslim Brotherhood. It's all over the Middle East, but it's strongest in Egypt. This is the real parent organization for terrorism in the Middle East. And if you know something about British history, you know that the Muslim Brotherhood was set up by British intelligence. It's associated historically with the Lawrence of Arabia project for channeling all Arab and Muslim fight and anger and national sentiment into something that the British could control, first against the Ottoman Empire. And it was parallel to the British control of the Zionist movement from the early 20th century. They wanted to have this conflict in the Middle East. So we are in communication very, very closely with the security services throughout the Middle East. LaRouche has a very long-standing relationship of discussion and briefing to really nail these people and end this nightmare. It's possible to break this whole thing up. If Sharon goes, it's for sure that the terrorism goes, because it is known widely in the Middle East that Sharon himself organized Hamas and has been coordinating with them on terrorist attacks.
That's tremendous. Tony, let me interject here, because I know we have before you the Boise, Idaho question about Trent Lott, but I want to relate to that at the same time, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
A message that's coming in directly from the meeting in Detroit of LaRouche organizers out there that's meeting right now. And they say, the question is, well, what do you think is happening in our country, in the sense that why are people so afraid to speak out about what's taking place in our country, and why is the media keeping the truth from the people? So if you can relate that, too, to these big shifts going on, as you see with Trent Lott.
I wouldn't focus on the media about why people don't speak out in the United States. I think this is a terrible flaw in the American people of the present generation, the baby boomers and the people that they have taught. You know, if you talk to somebody about political problems in the world, they are in a state of delusion and denial to this day about the failure of their own generation, of their own the system that they grew up with. And it is frightening to somebody to have to face the fact that they've been wrong. The values that they have, I wouldn't say held dear, because there's nothing dear about swindling, about speculation and so forth, but people have become cheap and ornery in the United States as a generation. You talk to somebody about, this may seem off the subject, but it's the same subject. Talk to somebody about Mexico, about immigrants, and say, well, the person says, well, I don't like immigrants. We have too many immigrants from Mexico. And, you know, you say, well, Mexico needs to have modern industry. They need high-wage jobs. If they had these things, if they were built up along the lines of FDR or Lincoln wanted to do, and as LaRouche is dedicated to doing, if they had nuclear plants and $30-an-hour jobs and steel mills and modern railroads, people wouldn't want to come here. Mexico would be a paradise. Isn't that a good idea? And the person says, yeah, I suppose so, but my issue is that I'm against immigrants. The person is in a state of denial about the fact that they themselves are killing their own children with the system that they have become a part of, the parasite system that we've had since Nixon in the United States, where we have only 11 million production workers out of 130 million so-called labor force in this country. What do people do? They don't produce. They don't have a productive relationship to the future of humanity as farmers or workers had in the past. This is now coming to an end. It's a terrifying situation for some, but there is a deeper hope that is now spreading around the candidacy for president of Lyndon LaRouche, who has always fought this completely outside of this generation's mindset. That's why he went to jail, because he said the whole generation has to flip out of its control, this mindset that they've been subjected to by the financiers. And he criticized the public itself. That's where the onus has to be.
So back to just in passing, and then we have a couple more questions from the conference call. It's not just that Senator Trent Lott was exposed and is down, but something Tony mentioned in passing, something called the Southern Strategy, that kind of shift 30 years ago itself, those axioms, that kind of thinking is breaking down. And the question is, it opens up an opportunity for our own leadership for people to, is that what the kind of thing you're saying?
Trent Lott was a Democrat, and he became a Republican in the 1968 election project of Richard Nixon. Nixon went south prior to that election to try to get support for a Republican comeback and put him in the White House by talking to Klansmen and others about, and to bankers in New York, about making the Republican Party of Lincoln into a white people's party. He was very blunt about it. And that's when Trent Lott became a Republican. That was itself the kind of racial flavor of it. The content was cheap labor. The content was, we're going to steal from Mexicans, we're going to steal from our own labor force, we're going to steal from farmers, and we're going to steal from countries around the world. We're not going to produce. We're going to close down Chicago and Detroit, and we're going to end the nation of Lincoln and FDR. To all intents and purposes, that economic strategy, that philosophical attack on progress, which was the mission of this country, is the content of the Southern Strategy. That has now crashed. So this is a spectacular situation. It's way beyond Trent Lott. We have bankruptcy in the hundreds of trillions in our banking system. So beyond the Southern Strategy, we're going to have to pull a Lincoln here and start building steel mills and nuclear plants in the space program again, completely reversing this failed Southern Strategy.
Thanks. Well, we have a lot of questions coming in. I'm going to ask Bob Baker to give us a couple more from the conference call. We do have an email, too, from Andy out there, but I'll ask Bob first. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, from Doris in Washington, she wants to know, what is the Kissinger connection to the Taliban? And Ed Christie wants you to clarify something you said at the conference about a report in the yearbook of Britannica, the science tech driver. He wants to know what volume that's in.
Okay, thanks. Do you want to go ahead, Tony, with...
I don't know about Kissinger's relation with the Taliban in specific. I know that that Kissinger and Brzezinski have always favored this policy of the great game in that area. I would like to answer the second part of that, even though it sounds like a very ununderstandable question. I think he's referring to the 1964 Encyclopedia Britannica yearbook. They put out a yearbook each year about the events in the previous year. So in that book, they discuss the Kennedy assassination. That book was put out, is the Encyclopedia Britannica is put out by the group at the University of Chicago that was at the center of the political change that brought in right-wing economics, that brought in the Moon Organization, Sun Myung Moon, and Friedman and Hayek, and also basically the Birch Society, the whole right wing in the United States. In the 1964 yearbook, they had an introduction to that yearbook, which said why they thought the assassination of President Kennedy the previous year was a good thing. They said that it showed the world that we're finished with the threat of a resurgence of 19th century nationalism. That's our enemy. We don't want that anymore now that Kennedy's dead. It's gone except for a few holdouts in the Third World. They were talking about nationalist leaders in the Third World who still, you know, look to this kind of 19th century American nationalism that Kennedy had been trying to revive. That's really the issue to the present day. That's what we are working on. I just did an article for EIR. It'll be in the next forthcoming Executive Intelligence Review on the revolution by Henry Clay in the 19th century and introduced that nationalism in the 19th century.
Good. Well, people can watch out for that historical article on Henry Clay, including we know that Henry Clay was a major figure, and it wasn't that he was president per se. And it wasn't that he had some other exalted international post, but it's a leadership question. And with that, I will take another email. We have time because Andy, the source is Andy. And here's the question. Again, it concerns, let me just read it. I don't believe what the major news media says on most issues. But it seems to me that what I've read recently is that Secretary of State Colin Powell has been beating the war drums more often than others. Is this only a public face? And behind the scenes, is he reacting differently? Is the media lying about what he's saying?
Well, yes. The problem is if you read the newspapers and watch the TV news, you're not going to get anything about what's really going on. For a figure like Colin Powell, you have to see what he says 24 hours a day. You have to see what he says and what he does. And this is true for figures in the government, generals and others who are quoted by the media in the way that, and when I say media, I'm talking about the pro-war faction, and just presenting propaganda to try to give the idea that war with Iraq, for example, is inevitable when it isn't inevitable. Colin Powell wrote an interesting autobiography in 1995 about, which included his experiences in Vietnam when he was a young officer, and he said that this war was a disaster. And they said, if we come to power, we will never allow. We should never allow. We vowed we would never allow this kind of thing to happen again. Now he was up against in Vietnam, and ever since to this present day, a faction of military utopians whose concept of war fighting is based on having a continual war on the borders of the empire. They call this limes, L-I-M-E-S, in the Roman Empire, the areas on the edge of the empire. It's a degenerate idea. It doesn't work. And the people who promote this concept are the ones promoting the war with Iraq and backing Sharon to go on his adventures with possible nuclear complications. These are the same. This is the same faction within the military that Colin Powell opposes, who designed the video games, which are peddled to youth in our country, with the explicit purpose by those designers of destroying their minds, of making them into killers that are amused to kill, to become a new type of American soldier for that Lemus project, for that imperial project, instead of citizen soldiers who are thinkers and who win wars. These people will never win wars, and they don't. The wars are not to be won. They are to be perpetual warfare in a kind of a twilight of civilization. These guys are so dangerous. Colin Powell has to put up with them day after day. It's only LaRouche who has had the courage and the continual integrity to put together a fight within and outside the government. And we're working with top-level people inside the government to really bring about an end of this crazy faction.
Yes, and I'll say right here that Lyndon LaRouche has been traveling a great deal, his wife Helga Zepp LaRouche, or otherwise speaking. And so I want people to check on the website now and watch it carefully every day for the transcripts of these, what amounts to a dialogue of what kind of leadership policy we're going to have in the world. He was in Budapest, Hungary, in Berlin, and he's also addressed youth meetings in Mexico, in Helga Zepp LaRouche addressed Copenhagen. You see the scope of the international discussion. And so just make sure and look on the website or call 1-888, that's toll-free in the United States, 1-888-347-3258. Tony, there is a, you described the hard facts of the current ugly pattern of this corruption, money going into the Israeli election and so forth for Sharon, this kind of thing, the war crazies. But there's a continuity that goes way back. You've written history about the kind of pseudo-religious, or whatever you want to call it, alignment, say in the United States or elsewhere, in the name of Christianity, for example, or there was a grouping, the Darbyites, that go way back. Do you want to say anything about the role, you know, how they would align with this kind of obvious rotten gangster corruption?
Yeah. The place on 39th Street, in 136 East 39th Street, the building where a lot of this money is
in New York City.
New York City is a so-called fraternal organization called B'nai Zion, or B'nai Zion, going back to 1908. During the 1920s, that organization was the scene of a debate between normal people of some kind and a fellow named Vladimir Jabotinsky, who was the organizer of a Jewish wing of the British Army. He worked first for the Russian secret police and then for the British secret services. And that B'nai Zion organization in 1926 adopted Vladimir Jabotinsky's program. Now, his program at that time was in support of the then Prime Minister of Italy, Benito Mussolini. And Vladimir Jabotinsky had a training camp for his organization, which I guess was later called Betar, so-called radical Zionists, in Mussolini's Italy. And
for these youth, they were
for
training?
Youth who were going to go and fight in Palestine. What were they fighting for? And this is crucial for people to understand. During the period of the early 1930s, there was a pattern of extreme violence perpetrated by Jabotinsky and his followers against Jewish people in Palestine who wanted to have peaceful relations with Muslims, with Arabs. There was the assassinations carried out by Jabotinsky are pretty famous within Israel. Jabotinsky represents something called revisionist Zionism. His organization became the Likud Party. His personal secretary was the father of later Prime Minister Netanyahu. That personal secretary was a close friend of this guy Stephen Friedman in Philadelphia, who runs another one of these foundations that we're talking about. So this is a very close bunch of historical fascists. Mussolini himself, now think about this, was in that same year, 1926, being financed directly by the J.P. Morgan Bank in New York City. His public relations, Mussolini's public relations, were entirely conducted from New York by the J.P. Morgan, by Thomas Lamont, the partner of J.P. Morgan. So the same problem of a British faction in Israel and America is what we're looking at right now. These are Anglo-Saxon racists with, I guess, what they might call honorary Aryans among the Jews, or honorary Anglo-Saxons or something. Hitler, I guess, must have been an honorary Anglo-Saxon to this faction, and along with Mussolini. Hitler and Mussolini didn't see it that way.
Teuton,
right?
I think.
So this is a project which is a nightmare that has gone on not just in this century, but as you say, it goes back to Palmerston, British Foreign Minister, 1840, who said the Jewish people have decided they want to go back to Palestine. He had consulted with exactly two Jewish people on that project, namely Montefiore and the banker Rothschild. But the British Foreign Minister Palmerston had in his right pocket John Nelson Darby, the so-called preacher in England who made up stories out of the Bible, saying that when it says Gog and Magog in the Bible, it's referring to Russia. And when it says this about Israel, it's referring to that. And the royal family in England are the real old Jews from ancient times. All these lies that are cooked up for purposes of making people crazy about religion and steering Jewish people in particular into a very wrong direction politically.